What's up, friends? Welcome back to the Dark Waters. I'm your host, Josh. It's Tuesday night. I just got done doing a podcast. It's been a while, right? It's been a week. I need to get better. I'm sorry. I used to do 2-3, sometimes 4 a week. But I haven't been doing that lately. I'm gonna try to pick it up a little bit, but I've been busy here, man. Been doing a lot of fishing, a lot of tournaments. And my daughters are in town, so I spend a lot of time with them. So gonna be a little bit lacking, I guess, but we'll get back to business as usual here soon. Hopefully this week, but tonight's episode was really good. Matthew Zappala, I'll butcher his last name. Whatever. Fuck it. I'm not gonna say it. It's not the move. But I had a great conversation with him. He's a fellow New Yorker. We've been fishing so many tournaments together. I'm surprised we never actually met. But he was at Champlain, Candlewood, and had some pretty strong performances. I think he finished sixth at Champlain. I think him and Ike tied, and he was able to up one by, I guess, one of his fish were big. I don't know, whatever. But it was, but it had a strong performance. Had a pretty cool story about the whole event. Flipped this kayak, blah blah. You know, just a lot of craziness happening. So it was good to have him on the show talk. The reason I found him, he posted something, and I'm like, oh well, he went through some shit. So I was like, you need to bring him on the podcast, right? So him on the podcast, we talked about it. Talked about a lot of stuff, man. Offshore fishing, mainly smallmouth, things like that. But awesome conversation. He's not really big on social media, so I don't know if we're going to be able to find him or not. But it was still a great conversation. Hope you guys enjoy it. But before we start this episode, I got to thank my sponsors, Styx Fishing. They make 6 awesome rods that cover all your techniques and lures. Dude, make sure you check them out, dude. I think they're sold out in their spinning rods right now, but they're good to go and everything else. Dude, awesome quality rods. Been using them for 2 seasons now. I have no complaints. They've made fishing a lot easier for me. Not only do they put rods out, but they also put a lot of good information out. If you go to the Styx Fishing website, styxfishing.com, dude, they got a library of videos that Nick the Informative Fisherman, Travis Moran, and multiple others have put. Just tutorial videos. I mean, just so much good information. These guys love helping people catch fish. So check them out. Use discount code DARKWATERS. My advice is get the reaction rod, the number 4, and the surface rod, number 5. They're number coordinated. Like, they're numbered and they're color coordinated for all those dummies. So check them out. You're going to love them. Obviously, X-Zone Lures. Been using these plastics for years now. Capital D, capital W, 15, get yourself a discount. Dude, they got some badass colors, man. Get some. Rogue Fishing Company, don't lose your shit this year. I already had a few people reach out to me saying they wish they would tip my advice. They lost their phone to the drink, and they can never get it back. And they got to explain to their wife what happened, and it's just not a conversation you want to have. So get some shit to save your shit. Discount code DARKWATERS. And last but not least, but we are powered by Dacodia Lithium. Very excited about this partnership. We haven't done anything yet, but we're working on it, man. We'll be giving out some shit here soon. But dude, who doesn't know about Dacodia Lithium batteries? I'm very lucky. I was able to partner with them. It just happened that it's Craig Storm, Stormy, lives an hour away from me, and now we're fishing buddies. So I'll take it. I'll take it. Anyways, guys, that's it, man. I'm going fishing early in the morning tomorrow. I got a tournament up in the Adirondacks, Tupper Lake. I'm excited about this Saturday. My club will be working with the Adirondack KBF, and it's going to be a joint operation, and it's going to be amazing. And after that, I think I'm done until the Susky. Later this month, I think July 31st and August 1st is that event. I'm looking forward to that. And I haven't decided what I'm going to do in August yet, so send me some ideas. Obviously, the cross is on my mind. The winning with Elite Kayak Fishing is on my mind, but I haven't thought that far yet. But man, I've had a great season so far. I've been having a lot of fun doing the show. Had a great fishing season. Can't complain. So I don't know. I'm in a good place, guys. Hope you guys are all feeling the same. But reach out to me, tag me some pictures, send me some shit. Love hearing from you guys. But that's it for tonight. I'll try to get one out later this week. But dude, have an awesome week and. I'll see you this weekend. Bye. What's up, Matt? Welcome to the Dark Waters. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
So you're a New Yorker right now, right?
That's right.
All right. Well, before we get into it, because it's your first time on the podcast, I don't even really know who you are. I'm sure a lot of people don't either. So you might as well introduce yourself, kind of just who you are, you know, what you've done, what you do, you know, things like that, so people can kind of know who they're talking to.
Yeah. So, you know, my name is Matt Zappala. I've lived in New York my whole life, and kind of fishing has taken me all over the place. You know, for a long time, I grew up just freshwater fishing for bass and panfish and whatever else in upstate New York. But I also started fishing saltwater really early also. So a lot of road trips to the coast in New York, a lot of road trips to Florida. The road trips grew to North Carolina, Massachusetts. You know, I fished in Texas and saltwater. New Jersey, Connecticut, you know, I've kind of made my way around the coast a lot too. I've been kayak fishing since I was about 16 and turned 32 in August. So it's been a little bit.
Nah, so you're doing it before it was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I got my first kayak. It was, I still got it. It's an Ocean Kayak Prowler 13. And the reason why I got it was because that was when I was starting to get into land-based shark fishing, and I needed a way to get my bait past the sandbar to get it into the, you know, the hunting ground. Right. And, so I got that. And, you know, when I wasn't making road trips to Florida to go try and catch tiger sharks and hammerheads and bulls, I started using it in freshwater in New York a lot, you know, mainly like frogging during the summer, you know, in between shark fishing trips and stuff like that.
And when you're out there shark fishing a kayak, are you, cause like one thing we used to do, we used to take small boats out there, like, you know, past like this, the sandbar or whatever, but we'd always go back to shore to drag them in.
So with this, and I, you know, I fought some from the kayak and mostly unsuccessful when you talk about anything of size. You know, I've caught mostly black tips in like that 5-foot range out there, but I've been towed around for 45 minutes to an hour by things I never saw. But when it comes to land-based stuff, it's you do all of your fishing from shore. The only thing you do is you just drop your bait. So, you know, you're in a, when you have the heavy gear and the big sticks, you got a harness, you know, 130 pound stand up tackle, short rods to be able to, you know, put 45 pounds of drag on a fish for 45 minutes to an hour, you know. So it's a different ball game, different ball game.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool for a New Yorker. So how did we get into the sport of kayak fishing?
Well, I mean, in terms of bass fishing?
Bass fishing, like the tournaments and things like that.
I finished law school out here in Albany, and I moved into a different apartment where I could actually keep my kayak. So I went back home to my parents' house in Ithaca, grabbed my kayak, and you know, just was able to actually put it to use locally. And it's nothing different. I mean, it's just what I've been doing. And after a while, I got wind of these kayak tournaments, and some of them were coming around like my favorite places, like Lake George. And I was like, well, you know, it's my favorite lake. You know, I call it my lake. Obviously, it's not my lake, but you know, it's my favorite place to fish. So I entered one, you know, and what really lit the fire was I had a really good bag of fish in my first ever kayak tournament. It was a KBF trail event on Lake George like 3 or 4 years ago. And I already had the limit. I hadn't submitted a single photo. And I dropped my phone in the water.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So that was like one of the worst moments ever. You know, and after that, I was like, I'm getting redemption. you know, and I'm coming back and I'm doing it. And I joined, you know, I did another one on Lake George the following year, and I did the other one on Lake George last year. Took a trip to Maine. I was like, you know what, I really like this. And this year I actually started traveling more for tournaments. So
now, did you hang out with all the Adirondack kids, the like Brian and Tyler Sweet and all those nerds?
Yeah. So I got to meet some of them really for the first time in Maine last year. They're good guys.
Yeah.
Got to meet some more people this year. Haven't been able to finish a whole lot of the local stuff. Just time, you know, time is a problem for everybody, you know. And
yeah.
I've only finished one local tournament. It was on the Mohawk in Hudson last year.
I did that one last year. It was a tough tough tournament. I wasn't happy about that one. I fished because where I live in Syracuse or north of Syracuse, so you know, I didn't go as far east as everyone else. I was like on as far west as you possibly could be, and it just wasn't a good fishery compared to what everyone else was doing. But still, either that, it was just a hard time to be in the water in August.
Yeah, I actually took that one.
Okay.
And it's kind of a funny story too. I had my girlfriend said, we absolutely had to make this brunch with her friends that day. And I was like, it's really good that I didn't miss this, because it actually ended up being a surprise birthday party for my girlfriend that I didn't even know about. So it would have been really bad if I missed that. I would have been screwed.
Right.
But so I only fished until like 10:15, 10:30 that day.
Oh wow.
So I had to get it. I had to really capitalize on that top water bite, and then I had to get off the water, and you know, luckily it worked out. So
yeah. Well, I mean, everyone struggled from what I hear, except you obviously. Yeah, it was a weird one. I don't know how I feel about the Mohawk River, but I tell you what, Lake George, that place is like in theory I like it a lot, but in practice, and actually going out there, I struggle every time I go out there. It's just one of those lakes I'm just not good or comfortable yet, and maybe that's why I kind of had a hard time with Champlain in the sense, because like there's certain ways you got to fish certain bodies of water, and if you don't like. You know, if you go there and you try to do what you want, you'll end up being disappointed, because you know Lake George is one of those lakes. Like if it's August, good luck with that, or you know July or August, good luck with that. You know, that shallow water bite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those lakes. It's like you got like a small window of time. You know, when they are up shallow, but that's a offshore like dream place. Like every year I go there, the people who are winning are the ones who brave out, go out there against the boats. The wind and everything else, and they're the ones who catch like the big bags.
Yeah, definitely Lake George summertime. It's all offshore stuff. I mean, if you want to catch 12 inchers, you can knock yourself out, go fish in 10 feet or less, you know. But it'll humble you for sure. It's like a daunting task. It's a massive lake, and you know, like in particular, and it's still stuff I'm working on, you know, patterning, figuring out how to pattern the big smallmouth is just, it's almost impossible to do it for an entire summer. You know, some people, like for example, for a tournament, maybe you can get on them for a week, you know, but the problem is those fish just roam, and it's just like they roam the ocean chasing smelt, and there's no, like, it's not like they sit on a rock pile. You know, on Champlain, they move too, sure, but you can just find fish that, you know, will call a rock pile home for a while. Lake George, when it comes to smallmouth there in the summer, they're just swimming around more like salmon or trout than bass. And
well, that was what I was going to kind of bring that up, because eventually we're going to talk about Champlain, but that was like one of the things that, I live close to a lot of good smallmouth fisheries. You know, I live close to Cayuga. I live close to St. Lawrence River. I'm 5 minutes north of Oneida. You know, places, you know, that are known to have good sized smallmouth. But one of the things that I don't really target smallmouth that much, especially during tournaments. And I know a lot of people give me shit for it because, you know, everyone loves to catch smallmouth. But, you know, just one of the reasons is that I don't really spend a lot of time with them is because that reason you said earlier, like they're not like – it's not something I can bank on a lot of times. It's not, especially if I'm traveling like the Lake George and I have 2 days of pre-fishing. I don't feel comfortable going out there, you know, my 2 days, you know, trying to – I don't know how to figure them out. I don't know like what the you know, what really goes into figuring out like how smallmouth, you know, the patterns. I know once you find them, and hopefully that's the day that you need them. You know, you could have a great day. But even on I guess last year Lake George produced both winners had, you know, they found a smallmouth bite, but so a lot of times though, it's just one of those things. It's just like, it's a hit or miss for me. I don't know if it's worth the, obviously I guess it would, go big, go home type situation, but I don't know. It's a hard thing for me to commit to, targeting smallmouth, during a tournament.
Yeah. You're right, man. Like, one of the frustrating things this year is all the tournaments I've gone to for the most part have been all smallmouth for me, which is great. I mean, I love it. But you know, they move, especially if there's a weather change, it's hard to bank on it. You know, if you compare it to largemouth, you know, you find a patch of milfoil that's 100 yards long and they're just going to be there for like 6 weeks. And it's like, oh, you know, big surprise, they're there. And, you know, you can catch the same fish probably a few times over the summer. I mean, I don't know. They just don't go anywhere. I mean, they do, but not like smallmouth. You won't find them, you know, 6 miles away.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and with Lake George, you know, I mean, like for example, last year, the day that I finished third over there, I went to a spot that I knew that there were going to be some smallmouth potentially coming by. And that was the whole game plan with them, is all you can do is try and be in an area where they might come through.
Yeah.
And my first drop, I caught a 21 inch fish that was, took the big fish of the tournament, but I couldn't catch a single other smallmouth that day that wasn't 15 inches. Yeah. When I was fighting that fish, I had 12 fish below me that were all giants, you know, as far as I could tell on the screen. I mean, I was like, it was loaded. You know, but they just left. They were just gone. They were passing through kind of where I was hoping that they would come through, and then they're gone. And that was it, man. Gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked to a lot of people. You know, I got a buddy, and he, you know, he's figured out, like, Cayuga. Like, he can go out there just about any day and put up just big limits. I mean, that's his lake. I mean, he's spent a lot of time. He's been graphing it for years, and now he's got it down to a science. If he wanted to guide, he could guide on that lake. But you know, you try to take that same shit to somewhere, some of these other lakes, like Lake George or Lake Champlain, or go down south to some of the bigger Tennessee chain lake or whatever lakes they have down there. It's like I said, I don't. It's a tough thing. They go down there and like, you know, you'll see sometimes they do a good job, but then sometimes you'll see like it's just a disaster. You know, like it's just next thing you know they're frogging, or you know next thing you know, they're up there. You know, I don't know. It's just a different. Different mindset, I think, just offshore in general. Do I want to get better offshore? Absolutely. I think there's some benefit. You know, one thing that I learned about offshore is, like, if you want a limit, that's a pretty damn good way to get a limit. Not necessarily a winning limit always, but, I mean, like, if you find the school of fish, you know, I've seen them put up limits pretty fast compared to, you know, like, you know, sometimes when you're shallow, it's it might only be 5 bites. You know what I mean? It might be five really good bites. But, I mean, there's definitely a difference. But, the offshore – a lot of work, man. A lot of work. You know, like Derek Brundle. You know, I've had the privilege of knowing him for years now, and like he spends a week, you know, like on these big tournaments, you know, pre-fishing, and he just grafts and he finds these spots, and you know, even then, sometimes he has a hard time putting together, you know, a winning limit. I mean, which in general, that's just the sport itself. I mean, it's a tough sport.
Yeah, it's tough. With the time constraints, the fact that you can't move too fast and cover too much water, it'll wear your ass out to trying to do all that. I mean, I can't even tell you what, you know, my buddy and I did when we went to St. Clair this year in terms of covering water, you know, graphing, finding stuff. And of course, tournament day, 98% of that was irrelevant.
Right.
You know, that bite was gone. Just like Champlain. You know, I found an incredible offshore bite, and I spent my two days there. I had Thursday, Friday. Thursday was rough. Friday was even more rough. But I found him offshore on Friday, and I started graphing similar structure. I spent pretty much all my time getting my ass kicked in those waves to try and find, you know, the basically more of the same stuff, and I found so much of it, and I put in so much time, and that bite was completely dead and gone. The fish were gone. It wasn't happening. you know, and you know, that's what happens with smallmouth and big water and all that offshore work you were talking about. It can just disappear.
But if it works though, if it's there, man, is it worth it? Right? I mean, it's just
it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to people like Mike McCrone out of I think Connecticut. I think he won Lake George last year on one of the days.
He did.
Fucking fantastic day. You know, it's not something I don't know he could replicate again. You know, or something. If it's just like he had a plan and it just worked 100% to the T, and you're able to pull out a victory. I mean, that's just not something I know that happens very often. You know, in situations like that. I mean, it was just a really. And when you talk to him, it's like the shit he had to go to get to that was just like, that's a pretty damn good story too. I mean,
Yeah. No, the offshore bar is great. It's in springtime, and you know, I mean, my favorite bites are a jerkbait, chatterbait bite, and everything. I love that. You know, but summertime, and fall too. I love the offshore bite. I chase it everywhere I go. That's all I did in Maine when I went last year. It can be incredibly rewarding. Most of the time when you find fish on your own out there, you're on your own out there.
Yeah.
You know, unless someone tries to squeeze up in your, in your juice, which happens, particularly from bass boats, but, or guys in yellow Hobies. I don't know what the deal is with yellow Hobies, but it seems like they come in for me. But you know, you have those fish to yourself and, it's rewarding. And a lot of the times, I mean, when you find them, I mean, they're yours. They eat. There's no waiting. It's just like boom, boom, boom. And, you know, you see a fish, you drop on it. And when you pick up, it's on there.
Yeah. Now, you know, when we talk about like your travels and stuff, you know, like going down to Florida and, you know, different places like that, you think it's different for up here? Right? I feel like the offshore bite, it's a really good thing for you to get into in the kind of lakes that we fish up here. Now, I haven't fished all the lakes down south, but, you know, I fish places like the Sandy Cooper. I'm from Florida, and they're just not these bodies of water like that we have up here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I find myself trying to fish, you know, kind of how the people down south fish a lot all year round. You know, I'm throwing chatterbaits. You know, I'm fishing shallow. I'm throwing grass. You know, I'm flipping the grass. I'm punching and things like that. It doesn't seem to have like the same luster that someplace down south has. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like sometimes I'm feeling like I'm forced to want to go like offshore because I just feel like a bulk. Like, you know, there's that theory that 50% of the fish stay shallow, and then 50% of the fish go back out deep after the spawn. I don't know if that's true up here. I feel like majority of them go out deep. You can still find them shallow, and I'm not saying that, but I just feel like up here because the way our lakes are set up. I don't think it's the same as like, you know, what a lot of people think about when they're down south. I get into a frog bite here, but you know, I see like, you know, how it goes down south and like the difference of their frog bite compared to ours. I'm like, it just seems like there's a big difference. And like, and you see a lot of people up here really, you know, making the money off those offshore patterns and things like that.
Yeah. You know, with bass fishing, I can't really, I mean, it's funny, you know, I've spent, you know, at this point, like, I guess in terms of like accumulated time, like months and months and months fishing in Florida, but it's all been saltwater. So yeah. I got nothing for, actually I've the furthest south I've, you know, ever bass fished is probably like, you know, the Hudson Valley in New York. That's, that's it. So I haven't fished very far south for bass. All the other stuff's been sharks and, you know, redfish, trout, flounder, bluefish, Spanish mackerel, whatever, you know, all the inshore stuff. So, yeah. But yes, I agree. I mean, everything I've covered, you know, everything I follow, and I follow professional bass fishing, you know, on a normal basis. And the offshore bite is just different down south. It's a different deal. I think a lot of it has to do with water clarity and the lack of smallmouth.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's two different.
Yeah, I think the smallmouth up here, like, you know, I hate to admit, cause I, you know, I don't like targeting them, but they kind of do rule up here. Like, if you can get on the smallmouth and you get, because they have the inches, you know, I mean, like, they have the length, they'll be beat up, shredded, not look like anything special compared to, like, some of the fat, you know, largemouth you can get, but they're just longer. And they run in schools, and, like, they're, they're out there in that deeper, cooler water, and you're not punching grass for an hour hoping to find that one big one. You know, it's just.
Yeah, that's true, man. Like, again, but it comes back to, are they going to be there?
Yes, exactly.
Are they going to be there? Because, like, what I've wanted all year in terms of tournaments, and I fished Candlewood and St. Clair and Champlain so far, you know, I've wanted a great, you know, power fishing shallow bite to get a limit, you know, to start whatever day, you know, any day that I'm fishing. Because honestly, like, I don't want to make it sound easy, but, like, shit, you know, throwing a chatterbait in some milfoil, you know, I mean, that is a really great way of getting it going. You can do a lot of work and a lot of damage in a hurry.
Yeah.
And it just, like, seems like a more dependable bite if you can, you know, if it lines up for you. And then the problem is the offshore stuff, you know, you end up putting in a lot of work. Sometimes it's a long haul. You get there and it's a goose egg, yeah. You know, and like, it's been killing me. I would have loved to have had any sort of, you know, chucking and winding shallow water bite all year. I would have loved to just chuck and wound a buzzbait or a chatterbait or whatever, spinnerbait, and just get a limit. And it hasn't worked out in a single tournament I fished. You know, it's been frustrating, but
yeah,
we can do.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Champlain a little bit. That's one of the reasons why I reached out to you. I saw your post on the, 80K like Adirondack, I think, Facebook page. Like, someone reached out to me and said, hey, you should probably try this guy. It seems like he's got a pretty good story. But, you know, like Champlain, I had a great time. I put up limits both days. I can't complain. They weren't great limits. I do envy, you know, because when you see how many big fish were caught that whole weekend, I'm like, I really wish I would have caught some of those. Not just there to win, but just so I could have that experience of catching those big-ass fish that I saw that were caught. But you did good. And you had a good first day. You had a decent second day. And I think you finished in what, seventh?
I finished in sixth. I was tied with Ike, and I got him with the tiebreaker, so Ike finished in seventh. So
that's
one of my main takeaways. I got to say, I edged out Ike and Ellie. So
right,
whatever.
But as many big fish were caught. It wasn't an easy tournament by any means. We dealt with a lot. Like, I think we dealt with especially if you were going for largemouth. I think they were in a funk. And the wind was just atrocious both days. I mean, for 4 days straight, I felt like you just couldn't win. Like, you just had to accept the fact that this is what it was going to be. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of regret, you know, because when you do these tournaments, you got to go in with, like, I'm here to win. You know what I mean? That's just the like, $260, you know, another $500-$600 for travel. Like, I'm here to cash a check. But there's a lot of things I let dictate the way I fish, and one was that win. Instead of, like, going up there, you know, I thought I need to go up there and, like, you know, chase some of the smallies myself, because I just figured that's going to be what was going to win. But, you know, that wind came in. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to fish offshore. And I didn't know about these freaking rivers that people were discovering. But, you know, lesson learned. But I know it was just like it was tough conditions, man. And the people who did really good, like, dude, they got some balls on them. You know what I mean? To go up there, like, you know, like, we'll talk about your story too. But the guy who won, flipped this kayak twice, you know, like, just fished dangerous waters. And then I know you had your incident. So what did you think about Champlain? What were some of the things that happened to you? Because, you know, the shit you wrote was like, oh, wow, he had a tough time, or he had an interesting time.
Yeah, you know, I, like, it's funny, you know, I knew about the rivers, you know, I knew about that. But, you know, I like fishing the northern half of Champlain. That's kind of my deal. Usually you can almost always rely, if you know where to look, you can almost always rely on a dependable largemouth bite. I mean, when you want to talk about not getting a largemouth bite, and that was me. I devoted the first half of Thursday all to checking on, you know, different kinds of areas where I've caught largemouth before, different kinds of stuff where I've caught them before, and I didn't get a single bite. So I was like, okay, that's out of the picture. Found that great offshore bite later in the day, but, you know, as I already said, tournament day, it was donezo. And I think part of it was because it just got worse. You know, the day had the lake, if it has time to, especially if it has time to build on a south wind or a north wind, but particularly a south wind, it'll just it'll just be huge. And, you know, the other thing about the lake is, as opposed to other places, they have, it has cresting white cap waves, you know, not these rollers that people, you know, are usually more accustomed to probably on big water, but they crest, they're mean, you know, and, so with all that being said, like, I knew it was going to be a problem out there. I still, tournament day, I still went out there, checked my offshore stuff. By 6:30, I was like, it's done, you know. and I moved shallower, and, you know, I'll just say this without giving up too much info. Basically, you know, Champlain's got a lot of hard man-made structure. So we're talking breakwalls, bridges, you know, piers slash docks, jetties, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And I found an area like that where I just, it was an area where fish were coming by. There were no fish like on it per se. You know, like the guy that won the tournament, that dude was on fish, you know. Yeah. I mean, there was a mega wad of smallmouth in his general area. And I did not have any of that. You know, that was not at all a thing for me. I was just in an area where I had, I think, what looked like post-spawn fish coming through. And my game plan was like, you know, I found this bite too in practice. It came by and checked on this one area in particular. And, you know, I just pitched a drop shot around some of this stuff. And no big secret, a Berkeley flatworm was what I caught all my fish on. You know, I don't have a problem saying that. And, you know, when you're fishing near this stuff, it gets, it's like, it's not how I fish. I don't like to fish like that. I like to fish large open spaces, open water, big water, you know, where I can cover ground, find a school of fish, figure out how to catch them. That's kind of what I like to do. This was a grind it out, try and have my lure in the right place at the right time when a big fish swims by. And so, you know, Saturday morning, you know, after I bail on the offshore bite, I catch a 19-inch fish. I'm like, okay. You know, I poke around a little more. I add a 20. I'm like, okay, this is, you know, a little more time passes. I catch a 20 and a quarter. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, I'm sticking with this the rest of the day. I got an opportunity. Like, the bites are slow, but they're coming and they're big. I didn't catch a single small fish up until that point. And then that's when, you know, I got a little too close. I think you, I was checking out your podcast Facebook page. You got a Predator?
It would be the Predator. They changed it to the big water.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm in a Predator. I'm in the last year. I think it was I don't know if it was technically a 2019 or 2020. I think maybe it was a 2020, but I got it in 2019. Anyway, so I have a Predator. Great boat. Love it. The only thing I wish I had done with it was buy it sooner. But, you know, I call her Big Bertha, you know, because she ain't small.
No.
And when you catch wind and waves broadside, it pushes you pretty fast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I got in a position where I tried to turn her and around the corner a little bit. And I had like a 4-foot wave catch me broadside, push me up against this thing. My rod snagged it. What happened was the wave kept pushing me, but the rods like stopped me. So the waves just kind of kept going and it was over. I mean, I flipped. I mean, I knew the second that rod caught, I was like,
shit,
I'm screwed. It's over. It was too much. You know, there was no backpedaling out of it. It, you know, I had gotten too close. There was like a 30-mile-an-hour wind gust. And it was a cresting 4-foot white cap wave, and the area had current. And like, I was, you know, there was no coming out of it. I knew what was going to happen. I flipped right there. My first time flipping the big rig, flipping at all in freshwater. I flipped hundreds of times in saltwater, but when you're in a kayak that's really just meant for that, you don't really have a lot of gear. It's not a big deal.
Right.
But so if I flip, I collect myself a little bit. I'm like, you know, shit, this is not good. None of my stuff strapped down except for my catchboard. And ironically, right before I dumped, I tied a little piece of 8-pound fluoro from like one of my old leaders to my identifier, and I tied it to basically the PDL drive. Just, I don't know why I did it. I was just like, oh, the wind's really bad. I just kind of had it laying on the deck. So I tied it. Right. So those are the only two things that were left after I flipped. You know, I felt something. I felt something hit my kneecap as I was next to the kayak after I dumped. And I looked down and I could just see blue. That was my catchboard banging against my knees. And so, you know, I did the trick I've seen on YouTube. I grabbed the pedal drive, the PDL, you know, and I just used that to flip it. I got it back up, and there's nothing there. Most of my flatworms were gone, which was not fun. All my rods were gone. My tackle crate was gone. All my plastics were gone. Everything. I mean, I was just straight up donezo. You know, I had nothing left. Yeah, so I was like, there's so many emotions, you know.
Well, how far are you from a shore? Like how bad of an area is this?
It's not good.
Okay.
I'll just say it's not good. It's not good. So the waves are like crashing over the back of me because I was still pinned up against this thing. And so I was, I don't know, 30, 40 yards from where I can get on some rocks and stand up. But, you know, when I flipped her back over, I tried to get and that didn't really work. I think, you know, a bunch of water made it into the hull anyway, which didn't make things any easier. That didn't work. I flipped her back over again. And so then that's when I decided, I was like, all right, I'm just gonna backstroke this thing. You know, I'm gonna grab it with one arm and then lay on my back and then just kind of like, you know, flail around until I get to shore.
Yeah.
And I drank a lot of Lake Champlain water because, you know, they were just kind of crashing over the top of my head. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't fun. Made it to shore. You know, got up on some rocks, scratched up my feet on some of those shells to, you know, add insult to injury. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, I can see my crate still floating. And I think it's just because I had those waterproof boxes with the air trapped in them.
Yeah.
You know, the crate's super heavy, but there's just air in there to make it float.
Right.
And my plastics, which are 99% Z-Man, you know, they float. So my giant box of plastics and my crate were floating away. I got back in there and then, you know, I got my crate and my plastics, but that doesn't help when you don't have a rod still.
That's right.
So I was in, and the water was like 8 to 9 feet where I dumped. So there was no, like, you know, just like going in the water easily and getting it. And it was a super sketchy place to even attempt to do that if it was shallower. But so luckily my buddy, Dan, who's been traveling with me to all these tournaments, he eventually kind of saw something was wrong. He was, I don't know, a quarter mile away, you know, and came by and he was like, dude, what is going on? I'm like, well, I dumped. I don't have any of my shit. You know, can you give me one of your rods so I can try and get one spinning rod back? Cause I was like, you know, like if I catch two more good fish, I'm gonna be up there. You
know, replace all the shit I just lost.
Right. So I was like, this could be, you know, this is really bad right now, but like maybe it could be better, you know?
Yeah.
And so he gave me a rod, and what I did was I tied on, it's never been done before as far as I know, I tied on a Carolina rig weight to a 5-inch spook, a 3-treble spook, okay?
Okay.
First cast with the Carolina spook, I snagged 2 spinning rods and a bait caster, and I was like, I'm fishing today. You know, I'm gonna finish this day. I was like, this is good.
It's almost like the lake just wanted to teach you a quick lesson. they didn't want you to stop, but said, just, you know, you need to understand, you know, what's going on here. But it sounds like the lake kind of humbled you just a little bit, but let you finish.
Oh yeah, no. I was like, holy shit, you know, I got, you know, a lot of valuable shit back already. A few casts, literally two casts after that, I got another spinning rod back, and now I was like, okay, I have all my drop shot rods back. Like, I have one pack of flatworms left. I did lose my drop shot box, so I lost pretty much all of my weights and hooks, with the exception of like one pack of hooks and like three weights that were heavy enough to be worth a shit. Mm-hmm. So that was going to be dicey. You know, I mean, look, as far as like, it went from worst case scenario almost to almost pretty much best case scenario. 2 hours later, I got another baitcaster back. So ultimately, I recovered five rods. I only lost one. The one I lost, I'm pretty sure I broke on when I dumped, because I heard something pop. And that was a rod that kind of was like the lever to dump me anyway. And so, like, look, man, you know, best case scenario, really, as far as flipping. I mean, other than the fact that it sucked and it took, you know, a while to, like, recover from all that. I had to re-rig most of my stuff, you know, like.
Yeah.
You can't
you had to, like, probably take a break. Like, holy shit, I survived.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was so jacked up. Like, dude, the adrenaline was, like, out of control. So,
well, it's just so weird when you first flip your kayak. Cause I did it last year. It's just, like, the initial thing is survival. It's, like, I mean, it's almost like when I first flip, it's, like, do I even worry about my kayak? You know, but, you know, I took a second because I had a ways to go. And I'm, like, all right, you're okay. You got your life jacket on. You're breathing. You're not hurt. And so, you know, I was, like, all right, well, let's at least – grab your kayak, you know. I was able to grab like a rod or something. I put it on top of my kayak, that's the initial thing. And then when you get to shore, you're like, "Holy shit!" For one, you're tired because you just dragged, you know, a kayak is barely floating. Because like mine, you know, I had a Jackson Coos at the time, and I don't know what it is about those, but like their hold, it just lets water in a lot easier than some of the other kayaks I've been in. But the thing was full of water. Like it was just enough air pocket to keep it afloat. But like, I mean, literally. Just a small portion of, like, my wife was pissed at me. She said, "Josh, you have insurance. If you just let the fucker sink, we would have got you a new kayak and then $5,000 worth of gear because I have insurance on everything." But you get to shore, you're like, "Holy shit, man! Like that was rough, you know." And it takes a while. It takes a while to get your shit together. Like, you're like, "Jesus Christ, that really just happened."
I feel you, man. Believe me, I feel you. I was in such a weird, like, mental place, you know, because I was so like jacked up and pumped, and you know, like it was definitely like survival mode mixed in there with like, you know, am I okay, you know, the waves are, you know, you're drinking a bunch of lake water and you're like, you know, but once I like got my rods set up, got my crate oriented right, like got my plastics, I did like a inventory and was like, okay, like what's like, what do I need to do to keep fishing? And luckily, you know, Dan did me a huge solid. He threw me a pack of, flatworms, and, he made sure, I think he gave me a few weights that day too, to make sure I finished out. Cause he knew I was working on a good bag. And, I don't know. I didn't waste too much time just like trying to get over it. I think I was just like literally so pumped. Like I wasn't cold at all. Yeah. I wasn't cold like even a tiny bit. Water was only 66. Normally, I think I'd probably be freezing my ass off.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, and I was hot. He's like, "How are you temperature wise?" I'm like, "You know, I'm great."
Well, I mean, like it was hot those days. I mean, the water temps was still 60s, low 70s, but the air temp, like during the tournament, I remember maybe day two, maybe it was day
Sunday,
two, it was hot.
Sunday was hot.
Yeah. Sunday was hot. I can't remember Saturday now. I remember.
I don't know where you. I don't know what area of the lake you fished. But I can tell you, it was raining sideways on Saturday, where I was. So
yeah,
it wasn't really warm. I mean, it wasn't cold by any means, but it was like kind of a cold rain, just raining sideways into your eyeballs. You know,
you know what? So Champlain's like, so big.
I'm
not wherever you were. I imagine we were miles and miles away from each other. Yeah. But you know, it's different, you know, but dude, like, I mean, you still finished, I think, second that day, day one.
Yeah. Yeah. I put up 96 and a quarter. So that was my best tournament bag. Here's, you know, kind of like the Scott Martin does his 2020s. I mean, I kind of laid up a little bit towards the end of the day. At first I put up a limit, and it was like when I finally got, like, my next fish was like a 15 something, and that put me at like four fish. And my fish after that was a 19 incher, and that's when I, like, you know, kind of did my best Mike Iaconelli impression. It was just like, let's go. Like, I can't believe, you know, I just got a limit. I think that put me with like 94 inches. And then I caught an 18 at like noon. And that's what got me to 96 and a quarter. And I was like, okay, no, this is good. You know, I'm sitting in second place. This is a really good bag. You know, going into the tournament, I said it was going to take between 95 to 97 a day to win. I was like, 96 and a quarter, you know, let me not beat up this area too bad. And I still kind of pitched around, tried to find a couple other things, but ultimately that was a mistake. That was a mistake. I knew it, like, because like I said, I wasn't on a group of fish. The fish that I catch weren't there 5 minutes ago for the most part.
Right.
So there was I wasn't like helping myself for day two to lay up at all.
Like, gotcha.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like fishing a spot and exhausting that spot. Like, you're catching roaming fish or,
yes.
You know, but saying that too, you might've been in a spot that was just going to reset all day as well. So
yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. So like, yeah. I wasn't going to lose anything.
Right.
It's not continuing to fish.
It's not like me fishing shallow and, you know, find a little spot of milfoil and just beat the shit out of it, you know, yeah, for 5 hours, which happened to me on day two. You know, but I didn't have very good plans. I didn't have a good pre-fish. Like, like I said, I did good. I mean, I think anytime you do a Hobie event, and you get two limits. You know, I think I finished 30th, but still, it's a good day. It's not bad. Obviously you want to do better, but it's just like I made a lot of mistakes. But mainly I didn't have a plan at all, but, not about me. This is about you, bro.
No. Like, I feel you, but that's exactly like if I was on a patch of milfoil where it was just largemouth, you know, backing off a little bit and taking it easy would have been definitely the right
move. I would have got a good limit and then probably stay on that spot and not done anything. Just make sure no one else got on it type thing situation.
Right. And I knew that, like, I should have just kept going, but I don't know. I was a little paranoid that maybe if I kept fishing it really hard, I would kind of run out of fish. But that was BS. Like, I don't know. I talked myself out of it, and, you know, that was definitely, looking back on it, that was a huge mistake. I don't know that if I, you know, went 100% after that, that I would have caught anything that would help, because my small fish was 18 inches. So,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know if I would have gotten one. But with how terrible and brutal and painful day two was,
yeah,
in terms of fishing for me, I could have used another inch or two or whatever, you know, to make it happen. So I screwed up there for sure. You know, I wish I would have tried to catch 99, you know, or 100 on that day. Just kept going full steam.
Dude, imagine that. I mean, like, yeah, like the past few tournaments that I've seen in the Northeast, you know, Candlewood, this one, and then, you know, even like the regional event we did, the elite kayak fishing on Cayuga, dude, the inches that we can put up here in the Northeast is pretty phenomenal. And I think a lot of people saw that from down south. It was like, oh shit, maybe they weren't just talking shit.
No.
I'm not talking about attendance, you know, records and things like that. I'm talking about, like, dude, we had someone, you know, like 97 inches in like smallmouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, dude, like, that top 10 was phenomenal. I mean, like, the inches that everyone was putting up on both days. I mean, it's just like, I think people, like, they just don't know, because, like, maybe it hasn't been shown, but our lakes, dude, like, we got potential to have like these big limits and fun limits. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different kind of fishing up here as well. you know, in some of our lakes. I mean, these glacier lakes, these old natural lakes, you know, not just reservoirs and, you know, like these lakes have been here for freaking millions of years and have just quality fish. And when I saw what happened at, this year, cause there's been a bunch of good tournaments up here. I'm like, man, people may start coming up here and fishing with us. Cause it's fun.
Yeah. Look, under any normal circumstances, like anything short of the conditions that we had, I know for a fact that there would have been some 100-inch bags on Champlain.
Let's just say pure
brown sugar.
Yeah. Let's just say this is a largemouth. Imagine if they would have had that tournament 2 weeks prior, because the weather got a little weird this year. Imagine what the largemouth population would have been 2 weeks ago.
They would have played a lot more, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, from my experience, the south end, you know, the primary largemouth area on Champlain, like, it's one of those things where if it's good, it's really good. Yeah. And when it's not, it is, like, not. And I would rather, like, fish, like, a ditch on the side of the road. Like, I know people are like, oh, my God, how could you say that about Ticonderoga? I'm like, because it's, like, literally it can be terrible.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously it wasn't terrible this tournament. There were a lot of huge bags that came out from the largemouth, but it's a strange place where, like, you know, when it's really, really good, you know, like probably it would have been 2 weeks prior because of this super hot spring and these heat waves that we had in early June, you know, that definitely moved things way up,
right?
You know? So yeah, it would have been huge. I mean, the smallmouth, if I could have gotten to the areas that I wanted to fish, you know, I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way on Champlain, you know, it could have been really serious in terms of the size of the bags that were coming out of that lake. I mean, it was really great. I mean, you know, Travis, that guy absolutely crushed them both days. You know, I had put up one good bag and they were around. I mean, he figured it out. He deserves major props for that. But if there was just some more, some of those areas were a little more accessible in the real world, you know, it would have been really crazy. You know, I could have seen needing 200, 4 inches to win or whatever, which is what I think like it took to win Seminole, you know, and people wouldn't think of that, you know, but I think that was possible. So,
well, I mean, there was a lot of things that kind of like besides the weather, you know, prior to us ever getting there, but then like the wind, and then this being that kind of fishery, like, I mean, like there's like some of the lakes up here, like it turns into oceans, in the right wind directions there, but also the fact that we couldn't really have access from the Vermont side for whatever reason, that kind of affected a lot of things. But still, when you think about all that and how much was the damage that was still done, I mean, like, I'm still like to this week, even though I didn't do as great as I wanted to, I'm still like, dude, that was an amazing weekend of fishing. A lot of great things happened, I thought. With all those variables and, you know, things that were kind of against us, you know?
Yeah, no. The Vermont thing, I mean, especially for this kind of weather, that was an absolute killer, you know? Like, the inland sea, you know, basically the enclosed Vermont side of the north half of the lake, that's about the only place you can, you know, you can find a fishable area with a large population of giant smallmouth in just about any wind conditions if you're allowed to launch in the inland sea on the Vermont side.
Right.
And I mean, you know, any wind, terrible south wind, terrible north wind, whatever, you can figure it out. It's still going to be tough, but, you know, you have options. That was a real killer in terms of, you know, another reason why I think, you know, yes, the turnout was great, but I can't even imagine what it would have been if we could have launched on the Vermont side.
Right.
It would have been, I mean, I would have been launching Vermont, I can tell you that.
All right, man. Well, we'll wrap this thing up, man. It's almost been 50 minutes, but dude, what do you got? What's up next for you, man? Like, I didn't realize you fished Candlewood. I mean, we fished a lot of tournaments together and actually never met. We need to fix that, but you're a New Yorker. I'm a New Yorker. It's got to happen somewhere down the road, but what's next for you? How are you looking at the rest of the season?
I just signed up for the Susquehanna.
I'll be there for that.
So I'm going to be there for that. That is definitely my jam. And so, I mean, I've never fished down there, but I'm definitely like a river rat for sure. Probably my favorite way of fishing for smallmouth is wading for them, you know, wade fishing and just throwing top waters. And, you know, I'd like the, I'd like to go down there and give that a go. All my saltwater experience with wade fishing up in the Northeast, you know, climbing up and down rocks and stuff, you know, that's all been super helpful for the smallmouth game, like really helpful, where I feel like I fish in a lot of places people just wouldn't even think to fish, and
right,
the smallmouth tend to love it. So I'm really excited about that. Other than that, I'm probably going to fish a couple local tournaments with the local club.
Yeah, we got one going on this Saturday.
Yeah, I got great memories from Tupper from years ago, but like I can't swing it time wise.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like it's not like I'm not going in there like 100, like I'm waking up early Saturday morning. I'm making the 3-hour drive, and I'm coming home right after.
So. Yeah, it's a neat place, man.
Yeah,
and the pike fishing. I know it's a bass fishing tournament. Pike fishing can be like lights out.
Right.
That was a lot of fun when I was there when I was younger. But yeah, no, I wish I could do more of like the larger stuff. But, you know, there's a small sampling in the Northeast, you know,
yeah.
And it's just it's tough. I mean, Candlewood, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you could write that place off. I never want to go there ever again.
I don't know how I feel about it. Cause you know, I did over the four days I was there, I caught big fish. I did. And I saw big fish. I just don't know if it's for me to go back there, it's gotta be a Pacific time. It can't be during the spawn. There better not be any fish on beds. Cause that broke my heart every morning when I woke up to go check on my fish and they were gone. I'm not putting up with that shit ever again.
No, and I mean, the thing I learned was, like, I am not, like, bed fishing tournaments get old fast. Man. They get old so fast. I can bed fish, and I pluck some fish off of beds on St. Clair. But, like, the Candlewood deal was just, like, no
thanks. It was hard. It was, like,
I've never seen a lake so beat to shit in my entire life with low pressure. Also,
I wouldn't mind doing it during the pre-spawn, or maybe come back during like a hot summer day.
Sure.
But I'm never like that time there was just like, I don't know how their fish survive. I don't know how they have a healthy fishery there. That I had no idea.
So. No idea. Hundreds of fish getting plucked like at any given moment in every single bay, every single shoreline.
And they get moved all the way down the south end to get weighed.
Yeah, it's bananas. I want nothing to do with that. But yeah, I mean, Susky, you know, I wish I could do more. I wish there was another option. But I think I'll have to just, start planning for next year after the Susquehanna.
Well, let's just say you do really good at the Susky. Like we're talking like top three.
Yeah.
You're sixth place at Champlain. I mean, that's some good points right there. Would that change your mind about maybe going to like Lacrosse or Pickwick
Pickwick, you know, I'd love to go there. I don't know a lot about the lake, but I feel like September is not when I would want to go take the trip to Pickwick, but I could be totally off on that. But Lacrosse, you know, if I were to do really well in the Susquehanna, two things I love. I mean, I love fishing for smallies and I love frog fishing. So like if I could do both and, you know, only have to go 200 yards to do both, you know, alternate between the two, you know, work a school of smallies and then go in one of those little sloughs with all that, you know, cabbage and just frog fish. Yeah. Sure. I think about it, but I mean, I'd either be unemployed or single probably.
Those two things. Those two things. So important. Yeah. You know?
So I don't know. I think about it, but not getting ahead of myself.
Gotcha.
Just trying to, I want to go down to Susquehanna. I have a good time. I don't think I'll have much, if any, time to practice down there. I fished the Susky from, where it actually starts, which is in Cooperstown, New York.
People, if I say Cooperstown, that. Right? Yeah, it's yeah. That's a weird place that it starts too, because that's a weird where it lines up with you know, where it comes in and hits Pennsylvania. It's nowhere near Cooper.
No, so actually, the place where it starts is one of my favorite lakes. It's Otsego Lake. It's a glacier lake in Cooperstown. Phenomenal fishery for both largemouth and smallmouth, particularly smallies. It's got a lot of similarities to Lake George. You know, it flows towards Binghamton, and then it goes down into PA and then pretty much goes south from there. And so I fished it from kind of all along Route 88, because it kind of goes along Route 88 towards Bing, coming from, you know, Cooperstown. And I fished it all through there, through the southern tier, but it's an entirely different river. You know, it's an entirely different river. You can cast halfway across it in most places, and like down there, you know, it's like it's a mile wide
right
in most places. So we'll see. But I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, is there anyone you want to think that makes fishing easier for you? Then we'll wrap this thing up.
No, you don't gotta worry about that. No. Good. like you said, nobody knows about me. So no sponsors, no worries.
Well, good, dude. If you ever get big, you started here. Just make sure you remind people. Okay.
All right. I'll give you your kickback. Don't worry.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you coming on. We'll obviously one day cross paths and we'll have a beer or something. All right.
All right. Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Yep. You too. All right. Bye.